In a world where full-length motion pictures exist, two men have the power to navigate their stories. Join Jeff and Michael as they attempt to recall some of their favorite movie memories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Movie Memories Podcast, hosted by myself, Michael, and Jeff.
That's right. Michael and I are going to challenge each other each week to recall our favorite movies from memory. It won't be a movie we've seen recently, and we won't know the movie ahead of time.
Then we'll go rewatch the movie, talk about parts that we missed, talk about our favorite parts, and maybe even talk about things that we didn't know beforehand. So sit back, relax, and see if you can rise to the challenge. All right, we're back for another episode. Great.
We're back.
We're just talking about lights and how we're lit. So if anybody ends up watching these on YouTube eventually, tell us how well we're lit.
Too lit.
Right?
Too right, kids? Lit to be legit. No.
Yep. So lit. So lit, kids.
I'm so lit.
I'm extra lit. Okay. You ready for a movie? So I'm going to challenge you now.
Let's go.
Now, the last one you challenged me to is a little rough, but I think you should be able to get this one. Here's a quote. All right. A guy gets on the MTA here in LA and dies. Think anybody will notice?
Collateral.
Hey, you got that quick. I was like, it's a line in the movie. Yeah, I was like, it's a line in the movie, but I didn't think it was like that iconic, but yeah. I know you like it. We both like it.
So. That line said twice, I think, by
yes,
Tom Cruise says it at the very end.
Yes, and he says it at the beginning when he's telling Vincent about the story.
Yeah, I Ching.
Yes.
Just saying all that stuff. But it's coming from Tom Cruise, so you're like, shut up.
And the only reason I did this is because we've brought this up quite a few times, this movie.
Yeah.
Especially after we did Heat. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a back-to-back. I'm going to give him two Michael Mann movies and then see if he can do them. Even though we do like them a lot, like I just thought it'd be a good challenge. And I know you like it maybe more than I do, or maybe you have a greater appreciation for
Michael Mann. I watched it a ton when it, like, I don't know, like the first couple years it was out. And then I rewatched it again years later.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing the trajectory of my life felt for Jamie Foxx's character.
Yeah. Now he's good in it. Not as good as I remembered, but he's good. He's good.
Yeah. It's one of those things where he's good because you don't see Jamie Foxx.
No, that's for sure.
Why. Yeah. Like, he's not himself. And that's why you're like, oh, he's an actor.
Yeah. I made some notes about it already, like in my head, but I'm going to save them for whenever you go and watch it. Just little things about the movie. Really any major critiques, but things like the music and all that.
You didn't like the music?
I just forgot how many like rock songs and like pop songs that were in it and stuff. And I totally forgot they were in there. And I was like, this kind of distracts from the movie.
Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So
collateral.
Collateral. You remember how it starts?
To be confused with Collateral Damage.
Yeah.
Or that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
How it starts. It has to be. There are like two things. There's Tom Cruise arriving to LA. And then there's Jamie Foxx at the cab place.
Yep.
I'm going to start with Tom Cruise. So he arrives. he arrives and he runs into Jason Statham.
Yeah.
so random.
Which Jason Statham at this point, I feel like, was a movie star. Maybe not like major movie star, but he was a movie star.
Yeah. He was in Snatch.
5 seconds.
I don't know if he had done any of the Transporter movies yet.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Before this came out. But he was up and coming.
Yeah.
Anyway, he runs into him you know, classic briefcase drop switch that happens. And then Tom Cruise walks through a bunch of people and it's kind of slow-mo, or at least it feels that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
He walks to get a cab, and then that happens. Before that, okay, yes. Now it's starting to make sense in my head. Yeah.
Okay.
Before that, shows Jamie Foxx go through his day because he gets in his cab. He cleans his cab really well. He takes good care of it. It's immaculate. There's no no like mess of any kind.
Yep.
He does a good job taking care of his stuff. It. Yeah, he cleans it. Yeah. So Jamie Foxx is cleaning out his car. He's getting ready for the day. He leaves and follow up with like a couple of cab fares that he has.
Yep, yep.
Just run of the mill people, have to go from A to B, blah, blah, blah. And then he runs into Jada Pinkett Smith.
He does. Yes.
Don't remember her name at all.
Oh, movie. No, I don't remember it either.
I
can tell you.
I'm just going to say Jada.
I don't think it's Annie.
Annie.
I was going to say, I don't think it's very important, but I guess it is.
later.
Yeah.
Annie. So he's getting to know Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Finds out she's a lawyer.
Yep.
About to do, like, getting ready for a very important case.
Yes.
And he talks about how he's going to do a limo service. Like, he's got this whole plan together, this business plan for this experience, this limo experience that he really wants to do. And he's been taking his time putting it together. Like, I guess it's been 5 years since he planned to start
12
this.
Years.
12. Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
12 years.
He's been a driver for 12 years.
Yeah. And I can't remember if the conversation goes that way. Like, why haven't you done it or not? I think that's more with Tom Cruise. Like, he kind of shoves that in his face later. But they talk a lot. He tells her whenever he's stressed, he looks at this picture on his visor. It's like, goes to that place. And I think he gives it to her. Does he give it to her? In that moment? Yeah, he just is like, here, take it. She's like, I can't take this.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like this little flirt tension is going on
connection.
Between them.
They had a connection, for sure.
They had a connection. This is the end of the trip when he brings her to where she needs to go. She gets out of the car and then she turns around and gives him her card. And so instead of the like paradise, you know, postcard, he puts her card in that place.
Yes.
So instead of that, he thinks about her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Okay.
So he's sitting there putting her card there, and that's when Tom Cruise walks up.
Yeah.
And I don't, Vincent. Yeah.
Yes.
Vincent walks up. And he's about to get in, but then he notices that Jamie Foxx isn't paying attention to him. So he starts to go to another cab. And then he's like, no, I'm open. I'm in.
Yeah.
So he gets in the car.
Yep.
Makes proposition to Jamie Foxx, and what's his name? What's Jamie Foxx's name?
Oh, yeah.
In the movie.
It's Max.
Max. Okay. Max Vincent. Yeah.
Max DeRocher. And it's funny. I mean, it's a smart thing he does. We'll talk about it more in the second part, but he was that close to not being in his cab. Could have been some other guy.
Yeah. Very close.
Yeah, but he went back for him. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's in the back seat. He says, it's like, hey, I'm not sure if he propositions him now or he goes to a stop first.
Or it's right before, it's when they first stop.
When they
first stop. Like, he's there and he's like, hey, I've got a bunch of these tonight. Yeah.
He's like, how about I give you this much after all five stops? I think it's five stops. He's like, okay. But they drive from where Annie works, which is why he was there. But like, if he was getting the key card, or he was just scoping the place out.
Yeah, probably scoping it.
And then they leave. They go to the first stop, which is the CI for this case.
Yep.
Against Taria? Is that the guy's name?
Oh, I don't
it's remember. It's Javier the... Bardem.
Yeah, he's, I don't remember his name.
The crime boss or whatever.
Yeah. They say whole... it a few times, but it's kind of hard to keep track of like what the case is all about.
Right. The
it's
whole,
a bunch of names.
It's some kind of case that's going to be able to put him away. Felix. And they're... Yeah, Felix.
Felix.
Felix. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of names
me.
They throw.
It annoys me that I couldn't remember that. I've seen this a bunch.
Yeah.
Felix, he just a crime guy. He's a crime guy. You know the guys.
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy.
Doing some crime.
There's some case coming up where Annie is the prosecutor. The CI is a witness.
Yeah.
There are actually a couple witnesses.
There are.
The CI, the jazz club guy, the guy that owns the another club.
Yes.
I don't remember his name. So that's only three. Was it four stops?
It's five. I'm pretty sure it's five stops.
Can't remember the fifth.
It's when they stop at the first one. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think she might be the last one. But he
the first one, the guy is no.
Yeah, it's some dude.
Oh, okay. The guy in the penthouse, that's the other one. That's the second one. The first one is the CI, and he throws him onto the car, onto the taxi cab.
Yes,
the taxi
well, cab. Yeah, he falls onto
the bullets of the fall kill him.
Yes.
So that happens. They go to the next stop. Somewhere in between, Mark Ruffalo goes to visit the CI. He's a cop. They're like, he's not there. The glass is broken. The body's gone. And he thinks that something happened to him.
Yeah.
But they don't know what because there's no body. And
right.
His opinion is that his body was taken away. And I think another detective, Peter Berg, director.
Yes.
He's there. And I think they argue about like whether or not, you know, somebody just got up and left or someone died. And it's like, clearly he fell, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut to the second guy in the penthouse. While Vincent is going up there, he ties Jamie Foxx to the wheel.
Yeah.
And some guys try and mug him. They take his wallet. They're about to leave. Tom Cruise comes out. And this scene's great. Just how quick he's able to like kill these two guys. Anyway,
yeah,
that was really cool. At least back in 2003, like
that was great.
There have been movies since then that
it's very John Wick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they make a point to point it out that like all the guys that are coming in the morgue got two in the chest, one in the head. Yeah. You know, execution. Assassin style.
Yeah. So there's the CI, then the penthouse guy, and then they go to the jazz club, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, they go there, and this is the first time that Max actually witnesses him execute one of the people. He saw the two guys killed in the alley, but like he forces him to go inside with him.
Yeah.
Conversation, bang, bang, right in front of him. Because
and Max doesn't know he's about to kill him.
No, he thinks they're just hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah.
He thinks they're hanging out. And he kind of realizes towards the end because I don't know if he mentions Felix or he mentions something.
Yeah, he does.
Makes him realize he's going to die.
He brings up somebody's name. And then, that guy's like, oh,
that's
you know that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they talk about Miles Davis. For a minute, and he quizzes him. He's right, but he doesn't get all of the specifics.
Yes.
So Vincent kills him anyway.
Yep.
Max points that out. He's like, he was right. He got the question right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of the dialogue between them is really good, and I wish I could remember all of it. But
because it builds up,
their tension
dynamic
between them
and the tension.
And it's a really weird relationship because it's like they're trying to understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they're becoming buddies, no. But
they're getting to know each other.
Yeah, because they get to know each other, there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
That's like the problem for Max when, you know.
I think it's because Max is trying to justify his part that he's playing in this by trying to figure out if Vincent's really a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Vincent's it's almost like it's in his personality. He can't help himself but to dig into Max's life and show him to take charge of it.
Yes. You know what I mean? Exactly.
Because he's a confident person. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think after the jazz singer is when, I'm not sure if he destroys his case at this point or if they have to go visit his mom.
Yeah, they go visit his mom
first.
And that's when he grabs the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Visit his mom and his mom is showering Vincent with compliments and Max hates it.
Yes, because he's real polite and nice. And, yeah.
Yeah. And he takes the opportunity to grab the bag and flee, gets to this bridge over a street, and he throws the bag into the street.
Yep.
And mostly everything's destroyed. The little thumb drive that contains the information about the people he needs to kill is destroyed.
Yep.
So now he has to go to Felix directly to get the list.
Yeah.
And because of Vincent and his occupation, he doesn't want anyone to know who he is.
Yep.
So he forces Max to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the feds are watching the place. So this is how Mark Ruffalo's character gets more Mark involved. Yeah.
It's something about Michael Mann movies. Whatever decisions he's making for character design, it's just like, you know, like hair and things like that. Like,
isn't he Tom like Cruise's really...
hair looks fake? And Mark Ruffalo's supposed to, I think, look a little Hispanic. And so, like, he's got a Spanish goatee with his hair completely slicked back. And I don't know. It's just there's some choices that are made in his movies. I'm like, why?
I mean, they made Tom Cruise's hair all white.
Yeah.
And it looked like a wolf.
And it does make him look. It looks like a wig. Like, it just looks too much like a wig.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Mark Ruffalo's character and the FBI is watching Felix at the club.
And then Javier Bardem kind of steals the scene, in my opinion. I mean, Jamie Foxx tries to, you know, play confident and everything in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But Javier is just great.
He is.
I love him.
He's great and everything.
He's talking about Black Peter and Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And then he agrees to give him the list, but then he tells some of his men to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know if he says to kill him or to wait until he finishes the job and then kill him. Yeah. They end up going to the club. Vincent makes him out. Like, he spots him immediately.
Yeah.
Kills them and the security at the club too. Mm-hmm. Like, in the crowd. Like, he's taking everyone out in the crowd.
Yeah. All the while, Vincent's there because they are trying to get
Max,
one of his targets.
Yeah. And he's trying to get one of his
targets. He's there at the club. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This Asian guy in the corner.
This big dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got women all around him and he's kind of stuck. He can't leave that spot. And he shoots him, kills that guy. Mark Ruffalo gets shot too in this because he's trying to escape with Max.
Yes.
Max thinks he's about to get out of it, but Vincent follows up behind him, shoots him.
Yeah, it's a perfect shot to not the shooting like that. Well, the shooting itself, they keep showing that Vincent's like a perfect shot, but the camera shot.
Yeah.
Is perfect. So you don't expect it. You think they're about to get out and it's from behind the camera that Vincent shoots at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Yep. And that's kind of when Max is just given up trying to escape.
Yep.
And on life, I guess. And he just takes it into his own hands, but not because he's got the confidence. It's because he no longer has the will, I guess, to try and, you know.
He's getting a little pissed too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a combination of things.
Yeah.
They drive away and he hits a car on his way out. Like, he just doesn't care. And they're driving and Vincent realizes he's losing control of the situation and he doesn't like that. And he pulls a gun and holds it up to Max's head the whole time. He's like, stop the car or something like that. And Max just speeds up.
Yep.
And he's like, why don't we just let, I don't know if he lets go of the wheel or am I just thinking of Fight Club?
He doesn't let go of it, but he does.
He rams it. He purposely
crashes it.
Yeah. The median or whatever.
Yeah.
And the car flips. And they're upside down in the car. And Tom Cruise just gets pissed off. Starts sitting in the back of the seat. It's so goofy to watch him get angry like a baby.
Yep.
But the cops show up. And that gives Vincent enough of a reason to leave. So he gets out of the car and takes what he needs and leaves.
Yeah.
He takes off.
Vincent has his gun.
Okay.
And leaves.
Yeah, he leaves.
Still. And now Max is left alone there.
Yeah.
And the cops.
So the cop comes, helps him out of the car, and he's like, are you injured? Are you okay? He's like, shining a light in his face, and Max sits down. He's like, don't worry, the car is insured by the tax company, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's trying to reassure him. And then the trunk of the car is open, so he sees the body of the first victim in there.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's when the cop pulls a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him, I think, to get on your knees, like, he's like, yeah, arrest me, blah, 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 do that. And then he sees, I think, the computer's open in the back seat, and it shows Annie's face.
Yeah.
And that's when he realizes that's his last victim.
Mm-hmm. And I think it all kind of clicks for him, hearing all the names and stuff like that and what she was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a great twist for the movie.
Yeah.
You don't expect it.
No.
Really? Yeah.
And then he... Kung Fu's the cop.
Yeah. He does. I guess he catches him off guard, but yeah, he does.
He does. Kung Fu's the cop. He gets the gun. I don't remember. He gets the gun in his hand somehow and handcuffs him to the door of the car.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he's like, if I don't go right now, someone's going to die.
Yeah. So he takes the gun and the music starts to pick up.
Yep.
And he's running. He's only like blocks away from the place, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's why Vincent decides to go on foot. He just decides, like, instead of like stealing another car or jumping in a cab, he just runs.
Yeah. This is like a new movie from this point forward. It's just pure action. So he's running and he's trying to get a signal to call Annie's office because cell phones back then were trash. And his phone is losing battery and he can't get his signal.
Yep.
So he grabs a phone off of a bystander and that phone's losing battery, right?
I think it's his.
I know he takes somebody's phone. Anyway, he gets to the top of this garage and he's trying to call her because he can see her office.
Yep.
She eventually answers the phone and he tells her, she's like, Annie, there's someone coming after you. And she thinks it's a prank. And she's like, why would you tell me all this?
Oh, yeah,
and then
he
describes the case with Felix. He's like, how do you know my case? He's like, people have been dying tonight. They're like, he's coming for you right now. And then he noticed that he's on the floor below her or above her.
Yeah, below, I think. Yeah.
And he's like, corner office, the floor below you. And he's like, that's my office. Because she's in like the library.
Yeah, whatever. She's like making prints or something like that.
Yeah, copies. And he sees her phone and he sees that one of the lines is in use.
Yep.
And he realizes that she's somewhere else in the building. So then he goes to an area and then turns off the power, or that's after that doesn't happen yet. So the phone goes dead. He can't talk to Annie. And that's when he runs to the building.
Yeah. Shoots, and he does tell her, I think at the last minute, like, he knows you're up there.
Yes.
Go or leave. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he runs into the building. He gets up there on an elevator. But at that point, Vincent either turns the power off or he goes in there looking for, I don't remember which happens first.
He turns the power off first.
Turns the power off first.
Yeah. He goes down to the basement. He cuts the power cord with a axe.
And then he finds her first and he's got a gun to her head. And that's when Max shows up. And then,
yeah.
Vincent's like, you're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then he shoots like his ear.
Yes.
Like,
just barely misses.
Just barely misses his head.
Yeah.
And that's enough for them to escape. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise is after them. And they're running and they get to the subway.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to figure out which subway they're on.
Yeah.
He guesses correctly. He jumps on the back of the train.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a superhero, and he gets in through the back. They're on the train, different cars. It makes a stop at one point,
yep.
And Vincent gets out of the sub, like out of the train, and covers the doors with his gun, right. So they can't escape. Gets back on the train right before it leaves. They're going through an area where there's like no power, so the lights flicker, turn off, mm-hmm. and they shoot at each other. Max and Vincent.
Yep.
Vincent misses him completely.
Somehow.
Because we know he's a terrible shot.
Yeah, no, somehow. And they were pointing their guns at each other already.
Yes.
That's the part that's not believable, because he would have had them lined up.
Yes.
But yeah, somehow he misses.
But
yeah.
Like, Max sidesteps slightly. Just a little bit. So that's enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And Max is kind of, you see his hand moving everywhere. He's shooting all over the place.
He's shooting all over the place. And he manages to hit him right in the stomach or chest. Yeah. It's, you know, lower torso. And Max is trying to reload his gun. He drops the clip, you know.
Vincent, yeah.
Vincent drops whoever.
Yeah.
And that's when he sits down and has the line. Mm-hmm. It's like, that man on the train, you think anyone's going to notice? And then that music.
And there's almost a little regret in Max's eyes, you know, as he's watching him die there.
Which doesn't really line up to the sociopath, you know, characteristic that he's supposed to have, you know, where he doesn't care about people.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I skipped a lot of dialogue. And their relationship.
Yeah. But I mean, it's hard. It'd be hard to remember everything that they talk about, but they do talk about all sorts of stuff. Like he does try to talk to him about his limo stuff. More comes to light at his mom's at the hospital and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Vincent, they show it once before in the club when he saves Max, like Max is about to be taken out.
Yeah.
And he purposely saves him. So again, like, he could get any other driver. So he saves him because he likes him. Yeah. Yeah.
They got a relationship.
Yeah. Collateral.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And there's a scene where, like, they almost run over some coyotes, I think. Or wolves. I think they're coyotes. That doesn't make sense for wolves to be in L.A.
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Like, he stops the car and they run across the road.
Maybe I like looked away and then I was working on my computer.
Another rock song happened. Starts playing.
No, God. I mean, you're not going to be able to unnotice it when you go to watch it now. That it really does distract a little bit from the movie. I just didn't like that part of it. The movie's so serious, and then to put like actual music, like
they ran out of money.
Pop I guess. And rock music in it. I was like.
It's funny because like they use digital cameras. I don't know how much those were or if it was a cheaper, more expensive option to use digital.
I love the film grain on it, though. The noise. Because it gives it a different feeling. It does give it a different feeling. Yeah. It is good.
And I'm sure a lot of like purists are like, why would you make a movie like this? And
yeah,
but it gives it a certain something.
Yeah, it gives it an edge. Uh-huh. Something about it gives it an edge. And there's a, we'll talk about it more, but the other thing that I had noted was the Michael Mann chase scene. Like the, from when they go on foot and all the way through the buildings and then into the street and then onto the subway. And it was just a little long. It's a little long for a chase scene on foot chasing. It's a little long.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah. That's collateral. Yeah. It's good.
I like the concept of like a guy that has no ability to get his life together suddenly is forced to at gunpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that kind of event.
Yeah. Could have been anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not like the poster on IMDb for it. It's like it started as in like any other night is on the poster. It's collateral. And he's holding a gun that he never uses in the movie.
Oh, really?
It's on the poster.
Vincent or?
Yeah, Vincent.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like it's Tom Cruise sitting down with a gun in his lap from the side. And it's a gun that he like has. He never touches a gun like that in the movie.
Oh.
Weird. But yeah, that's what it says. Yeah, it's good. It's a good movie. And you did really good.
Oh, thanks.
Huh. I mean, I don't think you really forgot a scene. Like you said, dialogue and stuff, but you got all the scenes together. It's very linear, of course, but I mean, you got it all.
There were like a couple things with his dispatcher that like his boss and Tom Cruise makes him talk shit to him.
Yep.
Trying to raise Max's confidence or like
exactly. You know,
make him take charge of his life.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's one other scene, a little bit with like Mark Ruffalo's character meeting up with the FBI. Because he's starting to piece it together. Like, I don't think this is really the bad guy. And they're like, you heard him. He was on the tape. He called himself Vincent. Like,
and they mentioned after him. A previous taxi cab driver.
That, yes.
Like same MO. Like
had went around killing people. You know, was a taxi driver for like 20 years. And then one night just killed people.
Yeah. Killed people.
And then like, died. You know, could be him.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but this guy, like being able to execute people like this, like doesn't make sense. Yeah. And he dies for it. All right. So now you get to go watch it. When's the last time you watched it? Do you remember?
Actually, no. It had to be over 5 years, I feel like.
Oh, before COVID. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you get, I mean, you get to go watch it, and it's been a long, long time. It's always nice because, like, if we just watch it like last year, I mean, it's fun because you do really well and stuff, and you get to go watch a favorite movie, but. When there's a little bit of a time gap, just kind of like, yeah, I like this movie.
Yeah.
I need to watch it more often. But anyway, so you go do that. And in the meantime, is anybody want a little taste of Mark Ruffalo being super sarcastic to a cop?
Glass here, then tires rolled over.
Maybe he jumped.
Sure, he's depressed, so he jumps 4 stories out of a window onto his head. Wow, that feels better. Picks himself up. Now I think I'll go on with the rest of my day. Come on, man.
Hey, Ray. Catch.
So are you, do you have the same opinion of Tom Cruise or the worse opinion of Tom Cruise after watching this again?
Same. Okay. My opinion with this movie never changes because I always think he should play more villains.
I agree.
Yeah.
And not like quirky villains, like real world. I know this isn't outside the realm of possibility, like real world villain. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be good at.
Yeah. Because he puts that much effort into his stunts and all that.
Mm-hmm. And
if you just had him play villains. No.
He still had to run in this movie. When he was chasing Jamie Foxx, there's a shot of a nice long straightaway with Tom Cruise. Yep. Yeah. Impressive. I only asked that because when I was watching it, that's something that ran through my head was like, you know, it's Tom Cruise. Some people love him or hate him. Some people think he's not a good actor. And it's just like, but I don't know. I think he's a good actor. And this is a movie where he got to kind of show off a different side of his acting chops.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And they're rewatching it. There are a few things I wish they left out. And I'm sure they put it in there to try and make you on his side. After he kills a jazz singer, he holds his head and then talks to him like, this is what you missed, you know, about Miles Davis, flunked out of Juilliard, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Yep.
And he looks at it and he has a moment. And I'm not sure what the audience is supposed to think in that moment.
Yeah.
If it's like regret or what, but he's been doing this for 6 years. He's a professional at it. And I don't see this being the moment for him. You know, where he's suddenly like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
I wish they took it out. I wanted him to be total sociopath, like no regret whatsoever, but still get on to what's his face? Max about, you know, moving on with his life.
Yeah.
Leave that in there. But I don't know.
They give us this little bit of a, it's almost like a, not a catch 22, but it's almost like a, okay, so they present him as, okay, so he's an assassin, he's a bad guy,
right?
Okay, well then we start to find out, and Max gets it out of him, like, oh, so you're taking out bad guys, and he's like, yeah, I'm just cleaning out the taking out the trash. So then you get this little bit of like, maybe the audience thinks, well, maybe he's not that bad. He's an assassin, takes out bad guys. But then if you go to find out that he doesn't even know who they are or what they've done, and he takes a guess at, well, these kind of seem like the witness or, you know, bad guy witness types, and looks like somebody doesn't want to be indicted, and he wants to shut up a bunch of witnesses. So then you find out it's another flip where you're like, oh, actually, he doesn't care who they are or what they've done. He'll just kill whoever he's being paid for.
Yeah. So indiscriminate.
Yeah. So it tries to do this back and forth thing where maybe it does give the audience and Max a reason to think he's not such a bad guy, but he really is. So
he really is a bad guy.
So what'd you miss? What did you notice that you missed, you think?
Oh, like everything with
you did pretty much. Yes. Yeah. You did. Like, you didn't mention the FBI scenes like at all.
I kind of I remembered it, but I just chose to ignore it. Everything that they show with the FBI to me is just so stupid. I just hated every scene with them.
It's like a side plot that
that was incredibly stereotypical and didn't elevate anything. Like,
yeah,
at all. Like they're talking about how, oh, it's Felix and these, you know, these are witnesses. Like, they're tying the case together for the audience. Yeah. And then they all, like, Mark Ruffalo's character dies. The one FBI agent gets shot in the leg during the scuffle with Fever.
Yep.
And that moment, like, shuts down their entire operation.
Yep.
The entire operation's over because he gets shot in the leg. Yep. They don't save the witness, and they don't get
pursue him any further.
No, they don't. They just, all because he gets shot in the leg, it's over, guys. We're done, and let's get out of here. Like,
I thought the same thing when I watched it. I was like, wait, weren't the FBI still chasing him and trying to figure out who this was?
No.
And then you never see him again.
Nope.
In the whole movie.
Mm-mm.
No. Yeah.
Just that one little thing. I mean, it's not... Yep. Honestly, it's not a little thing, but still, there would have been at least one person to be like, hey, that's the assassin.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go chase him.
Yeah. Or trying to find their whereabouts after he escaped in the cab. Like, there would have been some sort of follow up later in the movie. And you could have even had him come in as like a third party towards the end conflict to raise the stakes. Like, Max had to keep ahead of him and even, the FBI.
Even more, the FBI knew they were all witnesses. They could have made the leap that, hey, He might go after his prosecuting lawyer, you know. Let's put someone in the building with her, you know, or things like that.
If they are about to go to court like the next day, you think they would have been watching these important witnesses to a massive like crime bust with this crime lord?
Anyway.
What else did you miss that you noticed? Anything?
Trying to think of what I didn't talk about.
So you got pretty much every scene, and you got them pretty much in the right order.
I want to say the coyote scene happens before Fever, or on the way to Fever. And I read about that. Supposedly a bad omen. Like, if you see a coyote cross your path, you don't keep going because you'll probably die. Something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
If anybody doesn't know what that sound is, it's the dying Ewok. All right, so you didn't really miss much else, but what stood out in the movie? Like, what were some of the things that stood out as you were rewatching it?
Mark Ruffalo's a baby.
He's pretty young.
Yeah, he is. Like, I'm not used to seeing him like that anymore, obviously, because, you know, it's been since then. But just watching it again, I remember the first time I watched it, and I was like, oh, this, I kind of like this actor. Who is he? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that movie, I've recognized the other movies Mark Ruffalo's in.
Right.
But going back and watching this again, like, hey, he seems super young now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That stood out to me.
And when I first watched this, for some reason, he gave off bad guy vibes. Like, obviously, the slick back hair, the type of goatee. When he first is going to check on that Mario, I think is his name.
Ramon.
Ramon, the first witness that got killed. It's almost like he was checking on him as if he was a friend.
Right.
You know, like, oh, okay, so this guy is like a dirty cop. But no, he was probably there to check on the witness, and just so happens that he stumbled across him dying. So, but I got that vibe when I first watched it. I was like, "Uh oh, bad cop." But
yes, Trying to think. I mean, obviously that scene when they're in the alley and those guys mug Max. That was so the best scene. Apparently that gun draw is like used as an example to a lot of, I'm not sure if it's military or what.
Mm-hmm. So
if you want to know, go check it out. It's on IMDb.
Yeah.
But yeah, like ever since I saw that, that was just great.
Mm-hmm. Perfect sound design.
Perfect sound design.
For every gunshot in this movie. Like that sounded exactly like a gunshot in the alley. The echo, the deepness of it, the muzzle flash, like perfect sound design in this movie. Every gunshot.
I will say you talked about the rock music playing during every scene.
Oh my God.
There was really,
you love it.
No, there was really only like one or two that really bothered me. And I'm trying to remember exactly which ones. But other than that, it didn't take me out of the film. Because
it just distracted me.
I think I remember Michael Mann saying something about how he tried to use music from the areas that he was filming it, like the set locations.
Yeah, yeah.
He was trying to involve the culture of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get it. But there was one scene. I wish I wrote it down because it was just so distracting to me. After you said it, like, it's never going to go away now. Because you put it in my head. And no.
Sorry. Sorry when I point out things that are true.
But also, they repeat Chris Cornell's song from Audioslave.
Yeah.
At the end, because they're trying to give it like an emotional brevity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that annoyed me. Because it's like, oh, well, okay. And then the thing about Tom Cruise's hair being a wig. I wasn't sure. Like, I kept looking at it. I was like, well, maybe.
It's the crispiness of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was looking at the ends. It's really like near the ears is where mm-hmm. I feel like you should look if you think it's a wig.
It's because
I couldn't tell.
The hairs don't flow into, like the hairs like in his temple don't flow into the hair.
That's where
they curl away and around from his head. Even though his hair wasn't curly, and it just sets it off as like, that's just a wig. Yeah.
Just wrote in everything.
Which they make really good wigs. I was just saying, like, that's just a bad wig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The hair ends don't flow into each other. And so there's like all these little gaps on the top of his head and stuff like that. So it's just a bad wig. Like whoever was in charge of the wig department, just like, that's a bad one.
And then the other thing, him being an assassin and being the most obvious person sticks out in everything. Like, oh, it's the guy with the silver hair. Yep. Who else?
Yeah. And I wonder if there's, I wish we could talk to Michael Mann. I wonder if there was a purposeful reasoning behind the gray. The gray hair, gray beard, gray suit. If it was supposed to be,
he's supposed to be like a meaning behind it. Like, I'm pretty sure it's the wolf
predator,
you know, and sheep's clothing, blah, blah, blah. But he wasn't wearing sheep's clothing. He was the wolf. So all the sheep knew that's the assassin right there.
Right.
Yeah. I read that Tom Cruise had to like deliver FedEx packages for a day to try and see if he could blend into a crowd and people not notice that it was Tom Cruise.
Really?
Yeah. To prepare for the role. So he did that. And of course, no one knew it was him. But what if he was wearing this outfit?
Yeah.
Still tried to do that. Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I was just being a little more critical about this movie.
The last thing I'll say about the wig is Tom Cruise has such luscious locks that
he
could have easily grown his hair to be whatever style they wanted, and they just dyed it. Like they could have just done his hair that way. And it probably like, way better.
Oh, it'll just destroy your roots, man, or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway. So anything else stand out about the movie? You didn't take any notes? You son of a bitch.
Because I've seen this movie so many times.
At least one of us is taking this seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael Mann. He's
I made the critical point of like, just like we were talking about Heat and that chase scene at the end on foot. What did you think of that last chase scene? Did you think it was too long? Because I thought it was too long again. Like it was like another 15 minutes of just on foot chasing without anything until he gets to Thandie Newton or not Thandie Newton, J.D. Pinkett Smith.
Thandie Newton.
Yeah.
Should have been Thandie Newton. Anyway.
Should have been Thandie Newton.
Yeah, it should have been Thandie Newton. It's a great actress.
She is.
Jada Pinkett. I don't know.
Meh.
I don't know if I would say it was too long. It was adequate. It wasn't really like...
Hey-o.
Yeah, it was adequate.
It wasn't too long. It was pretty adequate.
It was just right. Enough.
It was definitely a Goldilocks chasing. Yeah. You know, not too long, not too short. Just right.
Just right. There were moments of it that were felt dumb. Okay. So the last scene when they're shooting at each other. I read this because I was watching it and I thought the same thing you did. I was like, this is really stupid.
Yeah.
Someone online pointed out that because of the precision of Vincent when he's firing, he always does the two in the chest, one in the head. And he does only shoot three times. If you watch it again, he only shoots three times. So he's only doing those three shots.
Okay.
The doors have two windows, the right and the left. Then right in the center is the steel.
You know what? And that's probably supposed to be obvious to us.
Right.
Because they even show Jamie Foxx's waving hand going kind of like a circle shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And supposedly if you go back and look, you see one and then two.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes total sense. And whatever. I'll give it to you, Michael Mann.
Again, if you're Vincent, you're looking at through the windows at him.
That's true.
When the doors are closed. So surely they would have been right through that window. Three shots through the window. But no.
Yeah. Yeah, to your point, if you're an experienced assassin, you probably thought, well, I need to be able to hit him.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to try and shoot through the metal door.
Yeah. I'm just going to aim for the center of the store here.
Yeah. And I have no idea how thick those doors are, but a lot of people think, like, because movies do this, a car door is going to save you from a bullet. No. No. Uh-huh. Might save you from, like, full impact of a bullet, but that bullet's still going to go into you. It just may not be as fatal. Potentially or deep wounding, but it's going to go through. So chances are that bullet would have gone right through that door.
I like everything in the chase of him getting to Annie in on the floor. And then he says, what are you going to do? And then he shoots him. See, this is the problem I have with this. He shoots him in the ear.
Yeah.
But it's from profile.
Yep. So, I thought the same thing.
How would the bullet graze his ear if he's to the, you know, the left? Yeah, he's to the left of him.
I thought about that, and I didn't go back and watch it, but I'm pretty sure at the last second when you see him jerk, I think it's like maybe Vincent's instincts told him to turn away from the shot, and when he did, he turned his head and got nicked.
Bullet time, yeah.
Because if you watch it, he kind of does that. He, like, twists with the hit, so... But yeah, I agree with you. I literally thought the same thing. His profile.
Yeah, it was profile.
He was aiming to the side of him.
Should have grazed the back of his head or
something. Took out his whatever's in the back.
The onion. The onion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it didn't happen either. So.
Yeah. Anything else stick out?
It would all be down to details of okay. So
yeah.
If her corner office is actually two floors down, she's in the library and she's on the phone. Why would it show that her line is in use? Like, I don't know if that is accurate, but I know how some of our offices are and that doesn't show it.
No, it doesn't.
So,
yeah. Unless it was like one of those things with the directory or a limited number of lines and they're always displayed on the thing, you know,
then right. Another thing. He's calling her. His phone, like the line cuts out because he's talking to her and then she says hello, like he's gone. And he looks at the phone and it shows like no zero signal. Battery. And then it cuts to Vincent and behind him, he looks at the phone and it shows that she's still on the line. But if he hung up, I don't think that light would be on. But yeah, there's a lot there. Yeah, I don't know.
I do like that there's, you know, it's funny. We said the FBI, I said that I do like it, but you mentioned the FBI, like little subplot kind of forming the case together for you. If the FBI was never in the movie, wouldn't change the movie one bit.
Nope. Yeah.
Other than the gun fighting in the club, but the gun fighting could have been between Vincent and Felix's men. And the witnesses' men.
Yeah.
It could have been amongst them and done the same gunfight. So the FBI literally do nothing to change the plot. Like, I know. Once he gets wounded, there's no follow up.
Nope.
So if they were just removed, it'd be the exact same movie.
And imagine being from Max and Vincent's point of view, where this is the first time you're seeing the FBI like they are.
Yeah.
They just show up and you're like, well, how did they know? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and the only reason I mention that is because I feel like it's hard to hear it and it's hard for the audience to piece together the case. And I just saw, I'm going to write down the time code right now. Part two time code.
It keeps saying stable internet connection. Was it saying it for you too?
It did the thing saying trying to reconnect, but it's back now.
Huh.
I'm just going to check the 19 to 21. I'll start talking again. But I say that because it's kind of hard to hear and it's kind of hard to follow. Like, you don't get enough detail from the FBI part for the audience to suddenly be like, oh, that's what's going on here. Like, to me, it was kind of just a little lost and not too clear. And so just take it out.
Yeah.
Didn't even need it.
Nope. Because he even said, Vincent even says, a bunch of people probably witnessed something.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. The only reason for it is for the little plot twist at the end where it's like, oh, his final target is the DA that, or assistant DA that he was flirting with earlier.
Like, I don't even think you need the connection of that. Like, I think the twist will still happen regardless of the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Because Max, he only needed to see it somehow on Vincent's target list. And they could have just had that happen anyway.
I'm sure they just wanted something to cut to. Like, to, you know, give the audience a break from just being stuck in a cab.
It's true.
Like, just like, let's get them out of there because they're going to want to leave.
The other thing that I wish I had in this movie was a concept of time.
Right. The only little,
yep.
When Annie's in the car with him, that's when the sun sets.
Yes.
And yeah.
Sun is setting. She said it's night shift. He does night shift. I think at one point it shows on his meter in the car what time it is. But then the rest of the movie, you have no idea.
No idea.
So you don't know if it's like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. Like,
and again,
how late into the night is this happening?
How does he know that she is going to still be in that building?
The office. Yep. Yep.
They said that there's a lot of research. Maybe they knew her routine, but I don't know.
They knew exactly where all the witnesses were.
Yeah.
So they knew that that guy would be at that club and all that. So yeah, maybe they did. And maybe they knew it was like her habit to work a big case like the night before through.
She does say that, I guess. Yeah. When she's talking to him, she's like, I throw up and piss my pants and then I
and then I'll go all the files and win.
And I win.
Is there a favorite, because you watch this so often and it's one of your favorites, is there like a favorite part or a favorite, a favorite aspect of the movie?
Obviously the gun fight stuff with Vincent and just Max's character with Vincent, just how Vincent talks to him and tries to, he gives him advice in the worst way, but also the way that he needs to hear it. Like, Max's character, because clearly nothing's worked before to make him change his routine or, you know, quit his job, pursue his dream. And the finality of seeing people die would make you rethink your life. And so it's a little, you get some Fight Club in there like that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that kind of finality to everything. Only after you've lost everything are you free to do anything kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, that scene in Fight Club when he holds the gun to that guy, he's like, what do you want to do with your life? And, you know, he said, after today, it'll be like the first day of the rest of his life. Blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Similar.
Yeah.
Similar concept in this. I feel like a bunch of movies came out with that kind of attitude around that time. Anyway. Collateral.
Yeah. Collateral. That's Collateral.
Michael Mann. Yeah.
Michael Mann. I'm Michael Caine.
I will say this. After Heat, I would not expect this movie from him. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
He was such a massive production and he did so much with it. Mm-hmm. And then it felt like he scaled back with Collateral because he has a digital camera. Sure. He only has two people in the car. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Collateral would have came first and then Heat.
Yeah.
But
that's probably the aspect of the movie that I do like. It's like, I like movies that can keep your attention when they are you're put into a capsule with just a couple characters.
Yeah.
if you can be a movie that's focused just on the relationship dynamic, the events that happen to these two people, especially if they're like polar opposites. Max is just a hardworking guy trying to make his living and aspire to bigger things. Mm-hmm. Vincent is a terrible guy. Like I said, sociopath. That's just a gun for hire. And they feed well off of each other, and everything just happens surrounding them in a small environment, the cab and where they have to go. Like, I like that type of movie because it's rare for you to be able to be captivated by it. Yeah.
I agree. And I tend to watch this movie way more than Heat. I think it was the way he handled the cops, the way he handled the criminals in Heat felt more meticulous. Whereas this one felt loose and like kind of whatever they do, nobody's going to notice. It felt like that. Like, it felt like the audience isn't going to notice this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but dropping the ball with the FBI.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, is like, I felt like he would have paid more attention to that and, I don't know, made it less like a episode of CSI and more like Heat.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I know. I see your point.
There's a moment when one of the cops is trying to explain, or one of the FBI agents is trying to explain to the cop about, like, oh, we see this all the time. This is nothing. We're the best of the best. This is going to be cake.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, you know, roll my eyes a little bit. But yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Collateral.
Collateral.
That's noisy film grain movie. Mm-hmm. It cool.
It'd be cool.
Watch it. Yeah. All right. So I think that's about it for what I want to know about Collateral from you. You got anything else?
I do. Actually, I was thinking about, you know, how we're poop taking a big old poop on the FBI and the cop aspect of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the other side of it with Javier Bardem in that scene at, I don't know the name of the club he's at, actually.
You said Fever?
No, that's the other one. That's the other club. Dance club. Anyway, the place where Felix is, Javier Bardem, that was all great. I loved all the aspects with that and Fever, like the crime situation. But Javier Bardem is so good. He's so good. I love that man. I love him in basically every movie I've seen him in. And this was my first taste of him ever.
Yeah.
And I had no idea who this guy was. And then he comes and talks about Black Peter. The guy that helps Santa Claus, you know? It's such a good scene.
And it is. All right, I suppose that's about all we have for Collateral. So if you have any other points about it, because we're kind of started to pick it apart, even though we both really love this movie. But if you got any points about it, email us. Shoot us an email at moviememorypodcast@gmail.com. Also go to linktree.com/moviememoriespodcast for all the ways that you can follow us and listen to the podcast and watch. I'm having a hard time getting through this outro because Jeff is sitting here laughing at me the entire time. Anyway. You said it was the first taste of Javier Bardem, but talking about a recent taste with Dune 2, now everybody knows and he's become a meme.
But he has.
Like you said, Javier Bardem is actually this is like the first time where we got a true appreciation for him, and you all can judge for yourselves.
There's an old Mexican tale. That tells of how Santa Claus got so very busy looking out for the good children that he had to hire some help to look out for the bad children. So he hired Pedro, and Santa Claus gave him a list with all the names of all the bad children. And Pedro would come every night to check them out. And the people, the little kids that were misbehaving, that were not saying their prayers, Pedro would leave a little toy donkey on their windows, a little burro. And he would come back. And if the children were still misbehaving, Pedro would take them away and nobody would ever see them again. Now, if I am being Santa Claus and you are Pedro, how do you think jolly old Santa Claus would feel if one day Pedro came into his office and said, I lost the list? How fucking furious do you think he will get?